Step two of my Rich Dad Seven Steps is take control of your cash flow. The best way I can explain the importance of taking control of your cash flow is by a story. Back in 1984, I had an employee. I did my best to explain to her the importance of step one, which is minding your own business. In our companies, we have a policy where we buy educational tapes and programs to educate the people that work with us on how to mind their own business via real estate or stocks or whatever the case may be. After about a year of working, having this one employee, I asked her how she was doing relative to minding her own business. And she almost broke down and cried. She says, I just don't have any money at the end of every month. And I just can't see, you know, I can't find a nothing down real estate deal. And you know, I don't have any money at the end of every month. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And it was pretty emotional. And I felt badly. She's a single mom with two little boys. So one day, I think I went by to pick up something, and I noticed her car was parked outside the garage rather than inside the garage. I thought that was kind of interesting, so I asked her, I said, how come you don't park the car inside the garage? She says, well, there's no room in there. And I said, what's it filled with? And she opened the garage door voluntarily, and what fell out were literally thousands of toys. Thousands. And the reason she couldn't get the car into the garage was because all of her money went to buying her two boys every toy they wanted. So in my experience, I mean, you want to be generous to your kids, but there's a point where it goes overboard. And I think she felt so guilty that this was her third marriage and her two boys by two different fathers. She was not in control of her emotions. So every time a child asked for something, no matter what it was, she went into greater debt to buy them anything they wanted, because in my experience, it was kind of an emotional blackmail. And so the reason she could not do step one, which is mind her own business, is very simply because she was out of control of her personal cash flow management, which is why herself and many people come to me and say, can I find a nothing down real estate deal? And there are nothing down real estate deals available. But oftentimes, they're not good deals. The reason they're nothing down is they're so bad, they're trying to get rid of them. But the real reason this person had to look for a nothing down real estate deal is because they're not in control of their cash flow. The worst thing that happens is if you're not in control of your cash flow and you find a good investment, then your bad personal financial habits will then spill over into either the investment or the business that you own. So one of the reasons many people are not successful in the business owner, the B quadrant, or the investor quadrant, I quadrant, is because they're not good at managing their personal financial money, their own cash flow. I've seen many people start companies, start their, you know, minding their own business, like they say, but because their personal financial habits are bad, they take those same bad habits into the business or into their investment patterns. So that's why step number two of Rich Dad's plan was take control of your cash flow. It's a very emotional subject. As my accountant says, not one of them spends money in the same way, because money, like it or not, is a very emotional subject. And so that's why part of becoming a B or an I, business owner or investor, is you must take control of how you manage your money. So what ultimately happened with this young woman, she kept coming back to me saying, I want a pay raise. I need more money. I need more money. And so what she did was, in her mindset, that if she made more money, that would solve her money problems. And I would say that that's the idea or mindset of 80% of the population. My rich dad said, making more money doesn't solve most people's problems. For what happens for most people, making more money only makes the problem worse. You know, to me, money is like a loaded gun. You know, you can either shoot away from you or you shoot yourself in the foot with it. And many people with money, what they do is they misuse it, they mismanage it, and they get further and further in debt. And that's why taking control of your cash flow is vitally important. My rich dad used to say, it's not how much money you make, it's what you do with the money you make that ultimately makes you rich, poor, or middle class. Many of us had heard stories of how a janitor ultimately becomes a multimillionaire. And that's a story because of a person who really manages their money well. It's not how much they make, it's how they manage their money well. The average middle-class person works hard, gets a pay raise, And suddenly this pay raise, they move into bracket creep or to another tax bracket. So they go see their accountant. And the accountant really, as I say, if you're in the E quadrant, the employee quadrant, an accountant can't do much for you. And all the recommendation, because there's no tax break for that, all the accountant can tell you is go buy a bigger house because you get a tax break for the interest on your house. So the trap that most people fall into is they work harder, they make more money, they pay more taxes, and then they get further in debt. And that's why it's that lack of financial literacy and the lack of financial education that ultimately keeps people on that treadmill of working harder, making more money, getting further in debt. To me, that is not financially intelligent. There's also a very popular idea going around right now that the way to get rich is to get out of debt. That, again, is very either a poor person or a middle-class person's way of looking at handling financial problems or handling your cash flow. And I think getting out of debt does have its place, especially if it's personal debt that's not making you any money. When people ask me, how do you become rich, or how do I buy my luxuries, the way I buy my luxuries is simply, again, by cash flow management. I first buy assets, and then my assets buy my luxuries. For example, one day I was walking through the Porsche dealership. I've had 6 Porsches in my lifetime, and I saw Porsche Speedster number 1, which was the first Speedster come off the assembly line in Stuttgart in 1989, and I walked past it. And my wife could tell I was drooling all over and sniffing the tires and says, you really love that car. I said, yeah, you know, it's number 1. I've never bought the first production model. She says, well, why don't you buy it? I said, well, because a car is not an asset. A car is definitely a liability, and this is a $120,000 liability. She says, how much money is that car going to cost you? And I said, well, probably, it's $120,000. I said, well, why don't you find a way to make that $120,000 by buying an asset? So what I did instead is I took the $25,000 I would have put down as a down payment anyway. I scoured the real estate market. I found a mini storage that paid me about $12,000 a month or something like that. I forget what it is now. So I bought the mini storage with the money I would have put down as a down payment on the Porsche. And with that money, the cash flow from my mini storage then paid the payments for my Porsche. Well, within a few years, the payment of that Porsche was all paid off, but I still had the cash flow from my mini storage, and I still have it today because I'm just too lazy to go out and sell it. So that's how, if you understand the difference between assets and liabilities and managing your cash flow, you can become wealthier and wealthier while still looking good and driving the nicest cars and living in the biggest houses around. I really do not believe in frugality. I mean, frugality has its place, but you have to be smart. Some people, I say, try to get rich by being cheap, and some people do. The problem is you're still cheap. Or why would you live all your life amassing huge amounts of money and live in a cheap neighborhood? That's selling your soul to money, in my opinion. Money is to be enjoyed, to enjoy the luxuries of life, but you have to do it with some degree of financial intelligence out there. So the thing I do is I buy assets first because I've studied, you know, investing in business for most of my life, and those assets then buy my luxuries. And that to me is very appropriate cash flow management. And that's the big difference between a rich mindset, a poor mindset, and a middle-class mindset. And that's why my rich dad forbade me from ever saying, I can't afford it. He said instead, how can I afford it? How can I buy it without working so hard for it? There's many people who believe that frugality is spiritual. In other words, you look at how this country was founded, was on the Puritan ethic of live inexpensively and live within your means and all that. Except that my spirit is a rich spirit. It really believes that there is an abundance of money, not that there's lack of money. As I said, Thomas Malthus, one of the greatest economists, the Malthusian theory of economics, believed in scarcity. But the religious formula, or the spiritual formula I believe in is, you know, God is abundant. I've never seen God skimp on a sunset yet, or, you know, very abundant. And I've noticed that personally, I've always felt better when I'm living in luxury than I'm living in poverty. And as I've said before, I've been poor. My wife and I have been homeless. And when I see people out there who are unhappy, oftentimes it's because their spirit is big, but their mind is cheap. And so the thing I always try and do is keep both my mind and my spirit happy. And that's where it takes mental education on finance or financial education to keep my spirit happy. I demand the best for my life. And when I'm being cheap with what I want, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally, I'm not a happy camper. So I'm being true to me. If you're really happy living cheap, then be true to that. I know there's people who are. But for me personally, that's not the way I live. So in taking control of your cash flow, one of the reasons so many people struggle financially is because they don't realize that there's really two sets of books. And many people say, well, you know, two sets of books is illegal, you know, double entry book and all that other stuff. And that's because they were never taught, much less how to balance a checkbook in school, is how to manage an income statement and balance sheet. If you can really read a financial statement, you will see that for a balance sheet to balance, there has to be two sets of books. For example, if you look on your financial statement, your cash flow, if you fill out your financial statement, you'll see the word mortgage for your house, if you own a house, comes under the liability column. And what the bank will allow you to do, so let's say you bought the house for $100,000. So you put $20,000 down, you have an $80,000 mortgage. So you say, oh, my net worth is $20,000 because I have $100,000 on one side and $80,000 the other. And that net worth is bogus because you really do not know the true market value of your house until the moment somebody gives you the cash for it. I'm not saying it's not valuable, but the idea of what your house is worth is a guess, and most homeowners guess to the high side. And so you really, and it's not putting any money in your pocket. It's not an asset. It's just this arbitrary figure called $100,000 sitting in your asset column that is, it's really, you know, bogus, in my opinion, as a strict financial accountant at that moment. Yet, if you go across town, so when you say to your banker, is my house an asset? The banker, of course, is going to say, yes, it is an asset. Yes, it's a wonderful asset. You should buy them. Your accountant will say, yes, you should buy that because it's an asset. But if you can read the real financial statements, you see, for your balance sheet to balance, it must balance someplace else. So when you go across town to your banker and you ask your banker, can I see your books? You will see your mortgage, which is listed under your liability column, it balances as an asset in the banker's asset column. So when a banker says to you, so your $80,000 mortgage shows up as an asset in the banker's financial balance sheet, where it shows up as a liability on your financial statement. So that's why when a banker says to you, your house is an asset, he or she is not lying to you. He's just not saying whose asset it really is. And the reality, it's his asset because every month your check makes him richer. It puts money in his pocket. So going back again to the definition of an asset or a liability, the determination is really cash flow. So if it's flowing out of your pocket, then that mortgage is a liability. But because it's flowing into your banker's pocket, it's the banker's asset. And that's true accounting. That is true financial literacy, understanding it. Or what I say is a balance sheet must balance. It just doesn't balance on your balance sheet. So the reason that most people in the middle class and poor are poor is because every time they write a check from their checkbook out of the expense column, that check goes to somebody else's income column. In other words, it flows from your expense to somebody else's income. So what makes a person rich or poor is on which side of the cash flow are you on. And the reason the poor and middle class struggle so much is because they've never been shown this in school. They've never been taught how to manage financial statements. And so every time they write the check, they make the rich richer. So let's say you and your family live in your house and you don't have a renter in it. You still have property tax going out every month. You still have insurance going out every month. You still have energy like fuel and heating and electricity. And you still have repairs going out every month. So if you're paying for it and the cash is flowing out your expense of the income and expense statement, it's still a liability. When people think they own their real estate, they really don't. The word real estate doesn't really mean real. Real estate comes from the Spanish word real or royal. In other words, back in the agrarian age, the monarchy, the kings and queens, owned the real, the real estate. It was royal estate. That's why Robin Hood was an outlaw, because he was poaching the king's deer on his real estate. So when people say it's real estate, it's not. It's royal estate. In other words, the royalty or the rich still own your real estate. Just try not paying that tax. If you don't pay your property tax, that's where tax lien certificates came from. If you don't pay your property tax, the government will take it. And at that moment, you will really find out who truly owns your real estate. It doesn't mean real, it means royal, and it's always belonged to the rich. So a lot of people ask me, well, should I make additional payments or pay off my loan and all that? If you were financially literate or you have high financial intelligence, you wouldn't ask such a question. Because the real question is, it depends. Let's say your mortgage is at 7% and you're paying $1,000 towards it. What would happen if you put that $1,000, instead of paying it to the bank, you pay the minimum, but you put it in a mutual fund or a hedge fund? Like, my hedge fund returns 35%. So I'll gladly sacrifice the 7%, which is an expense anyway, to make 35% in a hedge fund, and I'll put 28% in my pocket. So the more financially literate, which means going beyond just balancing a checkbook, understanding how an income statement and balance sheets work, you can do your own financial and fundamental analysis of how to manage your cash flow. That's why I really take offense when people arbitrarily say the answer is pay off your bills. Well, that is, if you're an average person or you're not very financially literate, you're not very sophisticated, that's very good advice. But if you want to be a rich person and manage your money well, then you really do need more education than the average bear in the woods has. And that's the whole answer I have for people, is don't look for answers, get educated. So the action step for step number two, which is take control of your cash flow, is right now turn to the print component of this program. In the print component, you will see that there's cash flow patterns of a poor person, i.e. money comes in income, goes out expense right away. The second is the cash flow pattern of the middle class. And what that means is they have massive liabilities, so the money is already predetermined where it's going to go by the debt you have, so it flows in and flows out immediately. And then there's the cash flow pattern of the rich person. And for myself, the reason I don't have a job or I don't work is very simply I have assets that put money in my pocket regardless if I work or not. So the first step in taking control of your cash flow is recognize what kind of cash flow pattern do you have right now. So the next part of the action step is ask yourself, am I in control of myself mentally and emotionally? I mean, do I have the ability to change my current cash flow pattern? Let's say I'm in the middle class pattern. If you do not have the ability to make that change by yourself, seek help. Talk to a financial planner or talk to an accountant and ask somebody to help you out, to put you on a budget, to pay off some bills. That's where frugality really helps at this point. That's what The Millionaire Next Door was so really good about, as a great book. It was really a great book because the second step you want to take in getting rich is really getting to manage your liabilities more than anything else, so that you can free up enough cash to begin buying assets, and those assets will then start putting money in your pocket. So seek help. Like, I go to the gym and I have a trainer train me, simply because if he was not there, I wouldn't show up. So I do seek help, because working out is not one of my favorite subjects. Managing my cash flow is fun for me, so I don't mind doing it. But if you don't have the discipline, then pay somebody who has the discipline. And finally, the third step of taking control of your cash flow is the reason I created my board games, Cash Flow 101 and 202, as well as Cash Flow for Kids, was to teach you to manage your money like a rich person. One of the objects of the game Cash Flow was teach you how to manage your money well to acquire assets, to turn your earned income into passive income or portfolio income. It also teaches you financial literacy. The reason it's a game is you learn by doing, and the more you do it repeatedly, you start to train your physical as well as your subconscious mind as to what kind of cash flow pattern you want. One of the drawbacks of the game is people say it takes a long time. Well, it's not the game that takes a long time. It's your lack of understanding the vocabulary, the words, the way it works. I can get out of that game in about 20 minutes, generally about an hour. So the object of playing the game is, can you get out of the rat race in less than an hour on a consistent basis? At that moment, you've probably trained your subconscious mind to start thinking and managing your cash flow like a rich person. So it gets easier and easier. It's no big deal after a while. See, 101 is designed for adults. It's a fairly sophisticated game. So I created Cash Flow for Kids. It's simpler. I use colors more than numbers to make my points. A friend of mine was playing the game with his daughter, and she got very, very angry. She got angry. I hate this game. And because she hated the game, because she couldn't win. Her brother was winning, her father was winning, her mother was winning, but she was losing. And the reason she was losing was she kept buying what I call doodads. She was a mall rat. She goes to the shopping mall and she kept shopping. And she kept buying all the trinkets, like a new dress, new purse, and all those things. She says, and she was getting so angry. And finally, she screamed at her dad. She says, "Dad, I hate this game because I can't win playing it this way." And he says, "That's the lesson, dear." And she says, "What do you mean that's the lesson?" She says, "You will not win the game of money playing it the way you play it." And suddenly she got the lesson of the game. Out of that height of frustration, she understood that it was her spending habits, that if she didn't change them at that moment, she would wind up poor for the rest of her life. And that's what the game was reinforcing. It was a reinforcement pattern of how the rich spend their money, what they spend their money on, and how they win the game of money. She clearly got, she says, it has changed her life. She stopped spending a lot of money. She's now looking at investing. And her habits have really changed because she realized that being a mall rat, she was not going to win the game of money.
This is the end of side six. Please fast forward the tape to the end to cue up side five for your next listening.